Former President Trump found in violation of the gag order again. Find out more about the judge's decision.
Prospects for a ceasefire in Gaza are dim as Israel makes final preparations for an operation in Rafah. Find out more about what's happening on the ground.
Israelis observe the annual Holocaust Remembrance Day, a message from Prime Minister Netanyahu to leaders around the world.
Russia expands a suppression campaign against the meditation practice Falun Gong. Authorities raid the homes of multiple practitioners in Moscow and throw one in jail as Russia deepens ties with the Chinese regime.
And in horse racing, Saturday's Kentucky Derby produced one of the closest finishes ever. Will there be a rematch? NTD's David Martin joins us to discuss.
And reviving traditional values through classical Chinese dance and music, New York-based Shenyun Performing Arts is wrapping up its 2024 global tour. Hear why one audience member called the show a nourishment for our spirit.
This is NTD News Today, live from our NTD global headquarters. Here are Stephania Cox and Chris Beers.
Judge Juan Merchan finds former President Trump in contempt for violating the gag order again. This is the so-called hush money trial enters its fourth week today.
Here's a word from Trump at the courthouse.
It's like they say there's no case here. And yet the judges gagged me, and I'm not allowed to talk about, I guess, his total conflict. The judge is totally conflict. It's totally conflicted, and you ought to take a look at it. And I'm not supposed to be talking about it, but I am allowed to say that the judge has a conflict that, like, nobody's ever had before, and you ought to take a look at it. He's taken away my constitutional right to speak. I was in Miami this weekend, and reporters are asking me questions, the same questions like you're asking me, and I have to say I have a gag order, I can't speak about it. Never happened before, ever.
Began the court session today by saying he found Trump violated his gag order a 10th time and fined him $1,000.
This was one out of a total of four counts of violations that the prosecutors alleged. It refers to comments Trump made about the jury during the trial.
Merchan said the $1,000 fines do not appear to serve as a deterrent. He said going forward, the court will consider a jail sanction.
Last week, the judge fined Trump $9,000 for nine counts of violations. Witness testimony resumed with Jeff McConey on the stand. He was the controller of the Trump Organization and worked under former Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg. This is expected to be a critical week for the future of House Speaker Mike Johnson. Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia says she plans to introduce a resolution calling for Johnson's ouster.
She's unhappy Johnson pushed through a foreign aid package last month that helps Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and says Johnson has compromised too much with Democrats.
It's unclear how many Republican members will side with her. Many Republicans oppose the push to oust Johnson and don't want to see infighting like when former Speaker Kevin McCarthy was ousted last year.
Meanwhile, House Democrat leaders say they will vote to kill Green's plan and try to keep Johnson as Speaker. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court says it'll decide on the legality of mobile voting sites. This after a circuit judge ruled in January that the city's use of a mobile van for absentee voting violated state law. The case stems from a lawsuit filed on behalf of Racine County Republican Party Chairman Ken Brown following the 2022 primary. The suit contends that using the election van as an alternate absentee ballot site violated state law. It also says the locations visited by the van gave an advantage to citizens affiliated with the Democratic Party. The Democratic National Committee is one of the defendants in the lawsuit. The Wisconsin Supreme Court issued a 12-page order on May 3rd, indicating that the justices had voted 4-3 to take the case. All three conservative justices dissented. And are Uber and Lyft drivers considered employees or contractors in Massachusetts? The state's top court will consider letting voters decide that answer. A ballot proposal backed by industry would consider drivers contractors. Labor interests want to challenge it and want drivers recognized as full employees. Uber and Lyft, along with app-based delivery services Instacart and DoorDash, have spent millions of dollars to support the ballot proposal.
Studies say using contractors can cost companies as much as 30% less than using employees. Labor activists say a ballot victory for industry in a state with some of the most employee-friendly laws could embolden companies to pursue similar measures in other states.
Should Uber and Lyft lose an ongoing civil lawsuit in the state and fail to win over voters for the current measure, the companies have said that they could be forced to cease operations in Massachusetts due to the economics.
And former CNN host Chris Cuomo says he is suffering from a health condition after he received a COVID-19 vaccine. Cuomo made the revelation during his News Nation program.
We know that vaccines can have unintended consequences, aka side effects, but nobody's really talking about it because they're too afraid of blame and they just want it to go away. But the problem is people like Sean and me and millions of others who still have weird stuff with their blood work and their lives and their feelings, you know, physically, are not going away.
Cuomo was interviewing a nurse practitioner, Sean Barkovich, who was featured in a New York Times article about vaccine injuries.
Barkovich says he got little support from agencies like the FDA, the CDC, and the NIH after his vaccine injury.
Cuomo did not go into the details about his symptoms or the brand of COVID-19 vaccine he received, but he did offer to share his doctor's information with Barkovich.
The New York Times article also featured an interview with a former PhD student in neuroscience, Michelle Zimmerman. She says she has been forced to live with her parents and cannot work, drive, or stand for long periods of time. She blames the vaccine, saying that the symptoms began just minutes after getting the shot.
And the meditation practice of Falun Gong, also known as Falun Dafa, has been heavily persecuted in China since 1999. Now, Russia may be looking to deepen its ties with the Chinese regime by following its lead.
This weekend, a Moscow court ordered that one female practitioner be put in jail for 2 months pending an investigation.
Moscow police raided the homes of five Falun Gong practitioners on Friday, arresting four. That was under a controversial law against what Russian authorities deem undesirable organizations. The list includes independent media outlets, journalists, and U.S. think tanks.
The suppression campaign previously included book banning, harassment, and interrogations, but it's the first time Russia has gone to such extremes against the meditation practice.
Russian President Vladimir Putin is set to visit China this month. Leaders from the two countries declared a no-limit partnership before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. NTD's Jeremy Sandberg reports.
A Moscow court Saturday ordered 46-year-old Natalia Mininkova be jailed for 2 months. After raids on Falun Gong practitioners' homes on Friday, prosecutors accused her of committing a serious crime against the foundation of the constitutional order and security of the state. Court records say that was for organizing Falun Gong-related meetings and distributing literature. Russian authorities have used the law against carrying out the activities of an undesirable organization to target over 100 organizations, along with journalists and human rights activists. The law carries a penalty of up to 6 years in prison. Russian authorities and state media parroted Chinese Communist Party disinformation describing the meditation practice when publicizing the raids. Executive Director of the Falun Dafa Information Center, Levi Browdy, told NTD the closer a regime gets to the CCP, the more they will try to appease them.
Going after dissidents of the Chinese regime, going after people who are speaking out against the tyranny of the CCP.
He says the home raids and arrests raise questions around freedom of speech and belief for all Russians.
I mean, if they're going to use some of these vague sort of rules that have been put in place over the last several years, but they're using against the Falun Gong practitioners here, I don't think anybody's safe. Because again, if they're going to go after peaceful meditators, who else might they go after?
I've got a question on China and Russia.
NTD asked National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan about the raids at the Financial Times Weekend Festival in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. He said it came as no surprise Russia would repress all kinds of people on issues relating to freedom of speech, press, assembly, and religion. He acknowledged Russia's deepening ties with the Chinese communist regime.
Russia is increasingly relying on China for a lot of things, particularly as they have lost other avenues economically, technologically, and otherwise. So this is a relationship that we look at closely, carefully.
A White House National Security Council spokesperson told NTD the administration is concerned whether it happens in China, Russia, or elsewhere in the world. The State Department, in its latest human rights report, said Russia misused anti-terrorism and anti-extremism laws, as well as other measures, to target Falun Gong without any credible evidence of violent actions or intentions. Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News.
To understand the situation, we have Levi Browdy, Executive Director of the Falandafa Information Center. Levi, what do you make of what's happened here in Russia with the shocking expansion of the persecution of Falun Gong beyond the borders of China?
Thanks for having me, and good morning. Yeah, this is very troubling, but obviously if we're going to be very honest about what they're doing in Russia, really this has nothing to do with Falun Gong. They have no problem with Falun Gong. This is really a shameless play to lean into their agreement with the CCP and demonstrate on the world stage how closely tied they are to the CCP. So this is about really making friends with communist China.
And so, you know, you've mentioned this motivation. What's the risk here for Russia itself?
Well, I think the risk is twofold in my mind. One is the message this sends to the Russian people. I mean, here you're raiding into the homes and pulling in and sending someone to jail simply for meditating and trying to live their lives by compassion, honesty, and forbearance, these principles. So what message does that send to the Russian people? And by the way, they blasted this news all over the state-run media in Russia. The second thing is the disconcerting picture this paints in terms of just how far Russia might go to be like the communist China and to be aligned with communist China. So those, I think, are the real two things that are very troubling about this development.
And of course, within China, it's not just Falun Gong that's targeted. There are ethnic groups and other religious and spiritual groups being targeted. So in a way, this could spell trouble in so many different ways for so many different people, not just people practicing Falun Dafa. How do you view the response of the U.S. government to all of this? And what do you think should be done further?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of voices have spoken out. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan has condemned this. White House National Security Council has come out. U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. But we really need to lean into this because I think what needs to be made clear, again, this really does not have to do with the character of Falun Gong. I think this is about a huge mistake that Russia is making. And I think that the U.S. needs to do more to make clear to Russia that they're coupling themselves with a regime that, by a lot of markers, is really on its last legs. A partnership with communist China really doesn't make sense for any country, including Russia. And I think the U.S. needs to make that very, very clear to Russia.
And considering that this policy seems to be directly linked to China and its persecution of Falun Gong, what, if you could just outline for our viewers, what is happening within China in regards to Falun Gong, for those who don't know?
Well, back in the 90s, first of all, I'd say Falun Gong was widely popular. It was endorsed even by the government. It was practiced by 100 million people. But it became so popular that over the last quarter century, 25 years, the Chinese regime has systematically imprisoned millions of people who practice Falun Gong. And torture and death by torture and death by forced organ harvesting are rampant. So that's the situation in China. And I think, again, that's why it's so troubling that Russia would take this specific step to show alignment with the CCP and going after Falun Gong. So it's such a horrific issue going on in China.
Absolutely. And we do know that China has been trying to expand its influence, you know, really across the world. And so what do you think about this? What does this forecast potentially, or what impact could it have on other countries?
Well, that's a really good question, because I think a lot of people look at Russia and China, specifically in America, and they see two bad actors. They don't necessarily distinguish them. But what I think, because we hear about Russian disinformation, we hear about these kinds of things. But what people don't understand is that in terms of the tyranny of its own people and transnational repression, that is illicit influence inside the United States, communist China is way above anybody else. In terms of what they're stealing RRP to all kinds of illicit influence in the U.S. And so the fact that Russia would align with communist China in this regard represents a very troubling step for Americans. And I think people need to understand that.
Absolutely. And we've seen many warnings from many China hawks, experts, even the FBI pointing to this threat of the CCP and its influences here in the U.S. So we all need to keep an eye on this. Thank you so much, Levi Browdy, Executive Director of the Falun Dafa Information Center. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, police clear more anti-Israel encampments on college campuses as school officials cancel commencements and move classes online.
And parts of Texas are flooded after days of heavy rain. See drone footage of the damage on the ground after the break here on NTD News Today.
And more updates on the Israel-Hamas campus protests and their aftermath. Police continue clearing out encampments as more colleges reconsider their commencements. Police are clearing an encampment at the University of California, San Diego this morning. The school announced that classes have moved online.
The University of Southern California says police cleared an encampment yesterday without making any arrests. It's the second time police cleared an encampment there.
This comes as Columbia University canceled its university-wide commencement ceremony planned for next week. It'll instead hold school-level ceremonies.
And at Princeton University, some pro-Palestinian students have begun a hunger strike. The school says physicians are monitoring the students.
And we have more updates on the Israel-Hamas war. Hopes for a ceasefire in Gaza are dim as negotiations stall.
This while the Israeli military orders the evacuation of Rafah.
According to CNN, two Israeli sources say the Hamas terrorist group demanded that Israel commit to ending the war. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has refused.
Hamas delegates will be back in Cairo, Egypt, for more talks tomorrow. CIA Director William Burns could also travel to Israel for further talks.
Meanwhile, the Israeli military began dropping leaflets and making phone calls in eastern Rafah, asking 100,000 people to evacuate. The military included a map of designated humanitarian areas around Khan Yunis.
President Biden will speak with Netanyahu today to discuss the Rafah operation. Biden will also meet with the King of Jordan at the White House later today.
And Israelis stood still across the country today as a siren wailed to mark Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed to defend Israel from enemies that he says want to destroy them.
80 years ago, in the Holocaust, the Jewish people were totally defenseless against those who sought our destruction. No nation came to our aid. Today, we again confront enemies bent on our destruction. I say to the leaders of the world, no amount of pressure, no decision by any international forum will stop Israel from defending itself.
The siren sounded for 2 minutes, bringing the nation to a halt to honor the millions of Jews murdered by the Nazis during the Second World War.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Isaac Herzog attended a wreath-laying ceremony at a Holocaust Memorial Museum in Jerusalem.
Some soldiers marked the day at the Nova Music Festival site, the location of the bloodiest incident in the Hamas terror attack on southern Israel.
The memorial was Israel's first Holocaust Remembrance Day since the October 7th attack, adding additional meaning to the already somber day.
And Israel's army is ordering tens of thousands of people in the city of Rafah to start evacuating. An army spokesman said around 100,000 people were ordered to move today.
The IDF says Israel is preparing a limited scope operation. The spokesman would not say if that meant the start of a bigger offensive. He said the civilians are being sent to a nearby humanitarian zone.
Overnight, Israel's defense minister told Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin Israel has no choice but to act in Rafah.
This comes after Hamas ended ceasefire talks in Cairo yesterday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says ending the war with Hamas still in power poses a threat to Israel.
And at the same time, the Israeli government is kicking Qatar-funded Al Jazeera out of Israel. The Israeli parliament passed a law allowing the temporary closure yesterday.
Officials cited the network's threat to national security. Authorities confiscated broadcast equipment in Jerusalem. Israel is removing the channel from cable and satellite platforms and blocking its websites.
And President Biden is meeting Middle East ally Jordan's King Abdullah II at the White House today.
A Pennsylvania pastor didn't expect to be looking down the barrel of a gun yesterday. But when a gunman attempted to shoot him, he sprang into action.
Pastor Glenn Germany was giving a sermon at Jesus Dwelling Place Church near Pittsburgh when an armed man approached him. Germany said he heard the gunman pull the trigger, but the gun failed to fire.
Church deacon Clarence McAllister helped Germany tackle the assailant and restrain him until law enforcement was on the scene. The pastor was unharmed. The suspect was later identified as 26-year-old Bernard Polite.
Local media reported today that a body was discovered last night in the suspect's home as well. So far, he has only been charged for the attempted murder of Germany. And Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announces a $400 million increase in federal funding for security in houses of worship. Places like mosques and synagogues can apply to use the money to hire security personnel or install cameras. The new money adds to the nonprofit security grant program. It's available to nonprofits to help protect their facilities from potential attacks.
The boost in money comes as concerns rise over threats against Jewish and Muslim communities, fueled in part by the Israel-Hamas war.
The program allocated just over $300 million last year to nonprofits to help protect their locations.
Some Bostonians are fed up with illegal immigration. Hundreds of protesters rallied over the weekend. The group is opposing current border policies and Massachusetts' sanctuary city laws. Here's more on the Close the Border rally.
The rally on Saturday saw speakers and protesters demanding the Biden administration and state lawmakers close down the border to stop the massive influx of illegal immigrants. Maureen Maloney is an Angel Mom spokeswoman. That's a group who have had loved ones killed by an illegal immigrant.
And expecting the already overburdened Massachusetts taxpayers to pay for the welfare of foreign illegal migrants is an abuse of our sovereignty.
Talk radio host Jeff Cooner puts the entire illegal immigrant situation into a historical perspective.
Never in the history of any nation has a country taken in this many migrants in this short a period of time. This is the greatest migrant invasion in the history of the world.
Former Massachusetts State Representative Jeff Deal warns current border and right-to-shelter laws are quickly leading to a distressing outcome.
In some cases, I know there's asylum process. Go through that asylum process. But people are coming now, and there's no questions being asked. They're just being given all these benefits, and it's bankrupting our state.
Several Massachusetts cities are sanctuary cities and provide a right to shelter for any immigrants, legal or not. The state's emergency assistance program already has a deficit of about $224 million this year. Next year's program will cost an estimated $1 billion. Massachusetts adopted the first-in-the-nation right-to-shelter law in 1983. Last summer, due to the influx of illegal immigrants, Governor Maura Healey asked residents to volunteer to host newcomers, including those who came illegally and are not eligible to stay at state-run emergency shelters.
Parts of Texas are flooded after days of heavy rain. Hundreds of people have been rescued from flooded homes and roads.
Oh, the water come up. I moved up the hill. I moved everything out of down there. Okay. I moved my camper up there, and I've been staying at my friend's house. The problem is all the development further up north. Okay. You know, they paved the roads and build houses and shopping centers and all that, and there's nowhere more for the dirt to absorb the water. So it flies. It just comes down it.
In the Fort Worth area, a child died after being swept away when the car he was traveling in got stuck in floodwaters.
The National Weather Service says areas in northeastern Harris County had a range of 6 inches to 16 inches of rains over the last week.
Drone footage of Brooks Crossing shows swollen, muddy rivers and streams overflowing onto a highway. Rainstorms have flooded businesses and homes and displaced thousands of residents in the region.
The National Weather Service says the area should get a much-needed reprieve. No heavy rain events are expected in the next week or so.
And the New York City Department of Corrections announced a temporary pause in using body cameras on officers. This decision comes after one of the cameras caught fire, injuring an officer last Friday. The Corrections Department commissioner emphasized the importance of staff safety. She suspended all body cameras until the cause of the incident is thoroughly investigated. The injury officer received treatment for burns and smoke inhalation, but wasn't admitted to the hospital. This incident is described as a rare event among the nearly 3,500 body cameras used since 2015. An investigation is expected to take 1 to 2 weeks. And relatives have identified 3 bodies found in a well in Mexico as those of 2 Australian surfers and 1 American. The 3 went missing last weekend. Thieves apparently killed the three who were on a surfing trip to Mexico's Baja Peninsula.
A state prosecutor suggested the thieves wanted to steal their truck because they wanted the tires. They then allegedly got rid of the bodies by dumping them in a well near the coast.
Three suspects are being held in connection with the case.
The three men were on a camping and surfing trip, posting picturesque photos of waves and isolated beaches. Boeing's space flight program is set to reach a significant milestone as it attempts to carry two NASA astronauts to orbit. The mission, dubbed the Crew Flight Test, could blast off as soon as 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time tonight.
The launch of the Starliner spacecraft is a decade in the making. Development hang-ups, test flight problems, and other costly setbacks have slowed its path to the launch pad, giving its rival under NASA's commercial crew program, SpaceX, the chance to become NASA's go-to for space transport.
Now, NASA and Boeing have finally deemed the spacecraft ready for its ultimate test. Throughout the flight, the astronauts will run a series of tests, including briefly taking over the controls of the autonomous spacecraft and looking how the vehicle responds.
This comes as Boeing has been in the hot seat due to issues with its commercial airplane division. Boeing officials have stressed that the Starliner operates separately from its commercial sector.
Live coverage of the event will stream on NASA channels beginning at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. The Starliner will launch from the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida.
More than $100 million in funding and resources is going to American auto workers and small auto suppliers. Vice President Kamala Harris is behind the move. Her office said the funds will go to wages, retirement, security, and respect at work. Members of United Auto Workers also ratified a new labor contract on Saturday. The deal includes at least a 25% general wage increase over 4 years. The agreement follows a series of union wins against the big three Detroit automakers last fall. Meanwhile, workers at a Mercedes assembly plant in Alabama will vote next week on whether to join the UAW. Coming up, Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping is visiting Europe for the first time in 5 years. Trade tensions and Russia's war in Ukraine are on the agenda. Hear what EU leaders have to say.
And the U.S. and the Philippines showcasing military might amid Beijing's growing aggression in the Indo-Pacific region. Footage of how joint armed forces thwart a mock invasion.
And Russia says it's planning tactical nuclear weapon drills near the Ukrainian border. More on what triggered the announcement and the Kremlin's response after the break. Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping is in Europe the first time after 5 years. He met with the top European Union official and the French president in Paris today.
We've also discussed China's commitment not to provide any lethal equipment to Russia. More effort is needed to curtail delivery of dual-use goods to Russia that find their way to the battlefield.
Russian President Vladimir Putin is set to visit China later this month. Xi and Putin have previously described the two countries' relationship as a friendship without limits.
The U.S. ambassador to the NATO military alliance said recently that Beijing had been selling drone technology and gunpowder ingredients to Moscow.
In the past 2 years, China-Russia trade has jumped 64%, equivalent to $240 billion.
Europe cannot accept market-distorting practices that could lead to deindustrialization here at home. But it is not good for Europe if it harms our security and makes us vulnerable. And this is why we act.
Over the past month, the European Union has launched investigations into China-made wind turbines and medical equipment. The EU also raided the offices of a Chinese security gear maker in Poland and Netherlands.
Germany and the UK arrested or charged at least 6 people reportedly spying for Beijing. Sweden expelled a Chinese journalist, accusing her of posing threats to Stockholm's national security.
In March, Italy formally left Beijing's Belt and Road Initiative, dealing a big blow to China's ambition of expanding its influence inside Europe. Italy was the only G7 country ever to join the initiative, which many Western analysts called a China debt trap.
France is the first stop on Xi's European trip, followed by visits to Serbia and Hungary.
U.S. and Philippine armed forces fired missiles and artillery to thwart a simulated invasion today. That's as territorial disputes between Beijing and Manila are escalating in the South China Sea.
The drills are a show of military force and serve to strengthen ties between the U.S. and the Philippines.
The annual drills involve about 16,000 Filipino and American troops. This year they began last month and will run until Friday.
Many of the drills were set near Taiwan, about 250 miles off the island's shore, emphasizing that one purpose is to counter China's rising aggression in the Indo-Pacific.
The Chinese regime considers Taiwan its own, despite never having ruled the island. Last week, the Philippines accused China of using water cannons against their vessels in the region, damaging the ships.
And next up, a teen is sentenced to almost 8 years in a juvenile detention center in Germany after stabbing a six-year-old boy and dumping his body in a bush. The two boys were engaged in a challenge popular on TikTok called the Blackout Challenge.
The older boy choked the six-year-old, then became worried the younger boy would tell his parents, so he stabbed the child repeatedly while he was unconscious.
The teen's lawyer sought a seven-year youth sentence for manslaughter, but after the teen admitted to the crime, the judge upped the sentence to 8 years for murder. The six-year-old's parents wanted the maximum 10-year sentence. The verdict could still be appealed. And now we have some short headlines from Russia, Italy, and other European countries. Russia is planning to hold tactical nuclear weapons drills. The Kremlin says the exercises are in response to statements from the West about sending troops to Ukraine.
Tactical nuclear weapons include bombs, warheads for short-range missiles, and artillery munitions. They're less powerful than the warheads that arm intercontinental ballistic missiles and are intended for battlefield use.
French President Emmanuel Macron repeated last week that he hasn't excluded the idea of sending troops to Ukraine.
UK Foreign Secretary David Cameron said Kyiv's forces will be able to use British long-range weapons to strike targets inside Russia.
The European Union's High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security arrived at an EU-Ukraine Defense Industries Forum in Brussels today.
Joseph Borrell is hosting the gathering to look at strengthening cooperation and boosting ammunition production in the EU and Ukraine.
Ukraine's Minister for Strategic Industries spoke at the meeting as well. He said the nation needed to work with European defense companies and find extra funding to procure more weapons.
More than 140 defense companies were expected to attend.
Italy's defense minister says economic sanctions against Russia have failed. Today, he called on the West to try harder to negotiate a diplomatic solution to end the war in Ukraine.
Guido Crosetto told Italian media that the West made a mistake in believing sanctions could stop Russia's aggression. However, he defended Italy's decision to continue to send arms to Ukraine.
Crosetto said the policy is aimed at obtaining the time and the conditions to achieve a truce. He added that if Russian troops were to occupy Kyiv, the West would face a more dangerous and immediate threat.
The Italian minister also said Ukraine's counteroffensive against Russia last summer had been a mistake given Russia's military superiority.
The European Union took a major step today in ending its legal standoff with Poland. The Executive Commission plans to withdraw its six-year procedure over rule of law complaints.
The EU cited new Prime Minister Donald Tusk's initiation of necessary changes. The bloc threatened to suspend Poland's EU voting rights and also block its access to EU funds.
That was over what the bloc said was the previous Polish government's backsliding on democratic principles. However, the latest move follows a February decision to start releasing billions of dollars in frozen funds.
Tusk has been working to overturn measures enacted by the previous conservative government since he took office in December.
Up ahead, reviving traditional values through classical Chinese dance and music. New York-based Chen Yun Performing Arts is wrapping up its 2024 global season. Hear why one audience member called the show nourishment for the spirit.
And in horse racing, Saturday's Kentucky Derby produced one of the closest finishes ever. Will we see a rematch? NTD's Dave Martin joins us to discuss.
British soccer fans traveling to Germany receive an unusual warning from their government. It has to do with the strength of German beer. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today. As Shenyun Performing Arts wraps up its 2024 season this month, it's still moving audiences around the world.
Over the weekend, the New York-based dance group gave 18 performances in 6 cities around the world, taking audiences on a journey through ancient China.
A Mexican writer called Shenyun spiritual food to mankind and added that the world needs more of a performance like this to save human values.
Magical. The colors, gold, blue, red, silver, are extraordinary. It bursts out like flowers, like a bouquet of flowers, or like fairies, a painting of fairies. It's all beautiful. It's bursting with color. It's really good, and the music is exceptional.
The live musicians, along with the live dancers, and then also the film on the back of the stage is just amazing. It's all coordinated just beautifully. Traditional music and the instruments brings it all together. It sounds very, very authentic.
The costumes, the dances, it's beautiful, but it also has a very profound message about communism and what we need to start looking out for here, because it can very easily happen to not be able to practice your religion or think freely because you're afraid. It's very sad. But they find a beautiful way to present it.
Shenyun's mission is to revive 5,000 years of divinely inspired culture and values from before communism. Theatergoers have been deeply touched by the effort and also took note of a deeper message.
I'd really like to see us adopt the philosophy you presented to us for a better, more peaceful world. And today I'm calm because I've seen a lot of goodness this afternoon, a lot of Zen. All the dancers and musicians in this symphony orchestra are people of high moral character. The artists have worked hard for many years. They are perfectly trained. The performance gives nourishment for our spirit, but also has a very important goal: to rescue the human spirit from the claws of the Red Dragon.
Bring the culture back to what it was. I think it's fantastic. Because everybody, I mean, history is very important to every culture. Not just the Chinese culture, but our culture as well. And making people aware of what has happened also prevents, hopefully in the future, mishaps happening again.
Audience members value the opportunity to learn about true traditional Chinese culture, and many said Shenyun is more than just a performance.
And the great thing is that this Shenyun performance is not just a cultural performance. It transcends the cultural into the spiritual. I sincerely hope that there will be more and more performances like this. In fact, there should be more performances like this that save traditional human values in the face of the destruction of our values, customs, and religions.
Honestly, all humans on Earth should have the chance to see this perfect, beautiful, and magnificent performance. It brings emotions together with art. I thought it was divine.
Shenyun's 2024 world tour will continue until May 11th. NTD News, New York.
And now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin. A busy weekend in sports, Dave, but let's start with the Kentucky Derby. Mystic Dan was the winner in a 3-way photo finish. Will we see a rematch here?
You know, that's the big question now. You know, this is the first leg of horse racing's Triple Crown. The Preakness is the next one, and that's just less than 2 weeks. It's actually a very quick turnaround. The owners for Mystic Dan have not committed to that race yet, so we're not quite sure. But it would definitely be tough to top this race, you know. Mystic Dan winning by a nose over Sierra Leone, who was just a nose ahead of National Treasure. That was the tightest finish in like 70 years. It took several minutes to sort out who actually came in first, second, and third. Drew a huge TV audience too, 16.7 million viewers. That was the most in like 35 years. And of course, a lot of money switched hands here. A record $210 million was bet on this race. But as far as a rematch, we might have to wait until the Belmont Stakes, the third leg of the Triple Crown, and that'll be in early June.
That would have been so exciting to be there in person, I imagine. But moving on to basketball news, according to StubHub, ticket sales in the WNBA are almost double what they were last year. Would you say that this is because of Caitlin Clark's popularity?
You know, I think a lot of it is. I mean, we just saw the women's NCAA title game that she was in draw better ratings than the men's for the first time ever. Plus, her last three college games each successively broke women's viewership records. Now, her first preseason WNBA game last week was a sellout. This is in Arlington, Texas, just 20 miles away from where the Dallas Mavs were playing the LA Clippers in Game 6. On the same night. Now, even her draft night jersey, that was a record sellout for all sports, NBA, NFL, MLB, everything. So she's got quite a following. But there's also another incoming rookie named Angel Reese. She's got a pretty good following too, over 3 million followers, at least on Instagram. So this could be kind of what the WNBA has been waiting for.
And wrapping up, Dave, the NBA is in its second round of the playoffs. What matchups are you looking forward to?
You know, I think Denver versus Minnesota is the most intriguing matchup of the four. You know, that's the only one that started. Minnesota took game one. But Minnesota presents some problems for Denver, who is the reigning champs. They essentially start two centers, including Rudy Gobert, who's a defensive player of the year, while Denver counters with Nikola Jokic, who's won three of the last four MVP awards. I think this is going to be tough for Jokic. You know, also a tough question for Denver is who is going to guard Anthony Edwards. This is a budding superstar. He's like a basketball player in a football player's body. 6'4", 225 pounds. He scored 43 points in game one. That was a game high. I don't know how they can slow him down. Now, tonight we have game two of that series. We also have game one of the Indiana versus New York Knicks. This is an old playoff rivalry back from the 90s, renewed. So that should be another fun one, too.
I know you'll be watching closely that game tonight.
Keep giving us an update. Will.
Thank you so much, Dave, as always.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dave. British soccer fans are in Germany for the Champions League tournament, singing their team songs and drinking beer, of course. However, the British government has also issued a warning to enthusiastic drinkers. NTD's Andrew Thomas has more on the local brew.
Drinking a lager at a local beer garden or pub is a staple for British soccer fans. But Brits traveling to Germany for the Euros 24 this summer have received an unusual government warning. The British Foreign Office has advised fans that German beer can be stronger and to drink responsibly.
I think it's pretty strong, the German beer, but you've still got a few percentage like craft ones in London. But it's larger. Steins are obviously larger, aren't they? So, got to go drink responsibly, as they say.
Not like me.
With just under 2 months until the Euros 2024, fans are still optimistic about German beer consumption.
I would say, if you're going to drink German beer, it has to be in this glass. It has to be double the size. We're not used to that. And it just gets you drunk quicker. It's fantastic. It's crisp. It's definitely a bit stronger.
According to UK charity DrinkAware, the average strength of lager and ale in the UK is around 4.6%. Beers in Germany, on the other hand, often have an alcohol by volume between 4.7% and 5.4%.
My recommendation is come, try it for yourself. It's great beer. There's great variety over here. The government lies a lot, doesn't it?
For local brewers and pub regulars, such a specific warning is somewhat amusing.
I honestly don't understand why they issue such a warning because, well, first of all, Guinness is relatively strong, I think, or so I thought, and they don't issue a warning at the Wiesn either. The Wiesn beer is even stronger than the normal pale lager beer here. I don't know, maybe they want to avoid the fans freaking out or something.
Germany is proud of its beer, and it's a large part of the country's culture. Brits take pride in their own local brew as well. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
Now turning to an event that united people across 169 countries. More than 250,000 people took part in the Wings for Life World Run. All proceeds go towards research and projects and clinical trials to find a cure for spinal cord injury. United by the motto, running for those who can't, runners, walkers, and wheelchair users gathered at starting points across the globe on Sunday.
Others participated individually using the Wings for Life World Run app. Participants covered an average distance of 7 miles each.
A Japanese man set a new event record by reaching 43 miles, while a woman from Poland ran 34 miles to claim the women's title.
According to the CEO of Wings for Life, the 2024 run raised a new record of $8.7 million.
What do Star Wars and cows have in common, you might ask? Well, they were both the theme of a unique race in the scenic Florida Keys on Saturday.
How bizarre. The Cow Key Bridge Run brought together a colorful array of participants. The course stretched a mere 300 feet across the Cow Key Channel Bridge, one of the shortest in Florida's Keys network.
The race embraced a Cow Wars theme. Fans of the franchise dressed in their best galactic garb and wielded lightsabers. Many runners also sported bull or cow costumes. A nod to Cow Key.
Star Wars enthusiasts worldwide celebrate the film franchise annually on May 4th. The date echoes one of the movie's most famous lines, "May the Force be with you."
And for round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app.
And be sure to stick around for NTD Newsroom at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll cover more stories from the U.S. and around the world.
Faith, rich in beauty and tradition, uplifting the mind and body, persevering through decades of persecution. Watch our special coverage of the 2024 World Falun Dafa Day Parade live from New York City, starting 11 a.m. Eastern Time, here on NTD.